The latecomers were a man and a woman, both probably in their fifth decades of life. I did not get the sense that they were having a liaison. Both were attired for commerce, so perhaps they were colleagues in a business. Around each one's neck was a lanyard leading to a flasher of the type used extramuros to demonstrate one's identity and control access to places. Since such things weren't needed here, both of them had tucked their flashers into their breast pockets. They had been appreciative tourists, trailing the group, cocking their heads toward each other to discuss fine details that one or the other had noticed.
"I was intrigued by your remarks about the Daughters of Canoas," the man announced.
His accent marked him as coming from a part of this continent where cities were bigger and closer together than around here, and where a continent might house a dozen or more chapters in contrast to our three. He went on,
"It's just that normally I would expect an avow to emphasize what made them different, but I almost got the idea you were hinting at
And here he stopped, as though groping for a word that was not in the fluckish lexicon. "Common ground," suggested the woman. "A parallel between them." Her accent, as well as the bone structure of her face and the hue of her skin, marked her as coming from the continent that, in this age, was the seat of the secular power. So by this point I had made up a reasonable story in my head about these two. They lived in big cities far away. They worked for the same employer, a business of global scope. They were visiting its local office for some purpose. They had heard it was the last day of Appert and had decided to spend a couple of hours taking in the sights. Both, I guessed, had spent at least a few years in a Unarian math when younger. Perhaps the man's orth had grown some rust and he was more comfortable confining the discussion to fluckish. "Well, I think many scholars would agree that Deot and Hylea both say that one should not confuse the symbol with the thing symbolized," I said. He looked as if I had poked him in the eye.
"What kind of a way to begin a sentence is that? I think many scholars would agree. Why don't you just say what you mean?"
"All right. Deot and Hylea both say that one should not confuse the symbol with the thing symbolized."
"Well, that's better."
"For Deot, the symbol is an idol. For Hylea, it's a triangular shape on a tablet. For Deot, the thing symbolized is an actual god in heaven. For Hylea, it's a pure theoretical triangle in the HTW. So, do you agree that I can speak about that commonality in itself?"
"Yes,"
the man said, reluctantly.
"But an avowed rarely takes an argument that far only to drop it. I keep waiting for you to base some further argument on it, the way they do in the dialogues."
"I take your point clearly," I said. "But I was not in dialogue at the time."
"But you are now."
I took this as a joke and chuckled in a way I hoped would seem polite. His face showed a trace of dry amusement, but on the whole he looked serious. The woman seemed a bit uneasy. "But I wasn't then," I said. "And then I had a story to tell, and it had to make sense. It makes sense if Deot and Hylea took the same idea and mapped it onto different domains. But if I had described them as saying totally contradictory things about their father's vision, it wouldn't have made sense."
"It would have made perfect sense if you had made Deot out to be a lunatic," he demurred.
"Well, that's true. Maybe because there were so many Deolaters in the group, I avoided being so blunt."
"So you said something you don't actually believe, just to be polite?"
"It's more a matter of emphasis. I do believe what I said before about the commonality. And so do you, because you agreed with me to that point."
"How widespread do you suppose that mentality is within this consent?"
Hearing this, the woman looked as if she had got a whiff of something foul. She turned sideways to me and spoke in a subdued voice to the man. "Mentality is a pejorative term, isn't it?"
"All right," the man said, never taking his eyes off me. "How many here see it your way?"
"It's a typical Prokian versus Halicarnian dispute," I said. "Avowed who follow in the way of Halicarn, Evanedric, and Edhar seek truth and pure theorics. On the Prokian-Fanian side, there is a suspicion of the whole idea of absolute truth and more of a tendency to classify the story of Canoas as a fairy tale. They pay lip service to Hylea just because of what she symbolizes and because she wasn't as bad as her sister. But I don't think they believe that the HTW is real any more than they believe that there is a heaven."
"Whereas Edharians do believe in it?"
The woman shot him a look, and he made the following adjustment.
I specify Edharians only because this is the consent of Sant Edhar, after all.
If this man had been one of my fraas, I might have spoken more freely now. But he was a secular, strangely well-informed, and he behaved as though he were important. Even so, I might have blurted something out if this had been the first day of Apert. But our gates had been open for 10 days, long enough for me to grow some crude political reflexes. So I answered not for myself, but for my consent, more specifically for the Edharian order, for all of the Edharian chapters and other consents around the world looked to us as their mother and had pictures of our minster up in their chapter houses. "If you ask an Edharian flat out, he'll be reluctant to admit to it," I began.
"Why? Again, this is the consent of Sant Edhar."
"It was broken up," I told him. "After the third sack, 2/3 of the Edharians were relocated to other consents to make room for a new circle and a reformed old Fa'anite chapter."
The powers that be put a bunch of Prokians in here to keep an eye on you, did they?"
This actually caused the woman to reach out and put her hand on his forearm. "You seem to be assuming I'm an Edharian myself," I said, "but I have not yet made Eligir. I don't even know if the Order of Sant Edhar would accept me."
"I hope so, for your sake," he said.